Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And copycats beware. Apple's billion-dollar court win against Samsung last week set off alarms in the tech world on what may soon be illegal borrowing and tweaking of software and design ideas. Should the verdict stand, many question what this will mean for the tech industry and its innovators. Joining me to talk about that is Chris Sprigman, professor of intellectual property law at the University of Virginia and co-author of the upcoming book, The Knockoff Economy, How Imitation Sparks Innovation. Welcome to the show, Professor. Professor Sprigman.
Thanks very much.
So there were seven patents in the suit against Samsung,
right,
including the pinch to zoom, this move on iPads that everybody knows about, tap to zoom and iPhones, and one finger scrolling, all those functions, but also the rectangular designs of the iPhone. Legally, how could Apple make a claim on the shape of an object?
Well, they should never have been able to. I think looking at those patents and thinking about them, the Patent and Trademark Office should not have granted them, and the jury should not have allowed them to be enforced. There's something very odd that happened at the trial, which is early on in the trial, Samsung annoyed a magistrate judge by failing to identify in a way that Apple could readily find among, you know, boxes and boxes of documents that they gave to Apple, evidence that they wanted to present in court that Apple's patents were invalid. And the magistrate judge said, well, we're going to penalize you by disallowing you to introduce that evidence. And the trial judge upheld him. So a lot of the best evidence of the invalidity of Apple's patents never got put in front of the jury.
Samsung has appealed the ruling, so it's yet to be seen what will stand. But why would Apple go after a cell phone manufacturer rather than Google, the company that created the operating system, Android, that controls many of these functions?
Well, I can give you a couple of answers to that. One is more craven than the other. So the reason they probably went after Samsung is because Samsung is the company that makes the phones that look most similar to Apple's phones, at least in Apple's view. And so on the design patent issue, I think Apple probably thought this was a somewhat easier win than any of the other cell phone makers. Now, Google, of course, doesn't really make hardware, although that's changing because Google is now putting out a tablet. Wouldn't be surprised to see actually Google phone in the future. But, you know, ultimately, this is a battle against Google, and I think from Apple's perspective, it's somewhat easier to take on Google indirectly by suing a Korean company in the United States than it is to sue Google, which, you know, somewhat like Apple, has an aura that surrounds it as an innovative company. It's probably easier for a U.S. jury to believe that Samsung's a copycat than Google.
Listeners, anybody want to get in on this? Is this Apple versus Samsung lawsuit something you've been following? Maybe you're an inventor yourself or a designer. Maybe you work for one of these companies. Give us a call if you're interested in this. 212-433-WNYC. Maybe you're a patent lawyer. 212-433-9692. For Chris Sprigman, author of The Knockoff Economy, How Imitation Sparks Innovation. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And if this ruling stands, what does it mean for those Samsung Android phone owners? Are they going to have to give up their phones?
Not very likely. So there's an injunction that has been asked for by Apple against a whole bunch of Samsung phones. I expect that injunction will be granted, but it'll be stayed in all likelihood for the appeal. And by the time the appeal is over, Samsung will probably move on to a whole new generation of phones. So I don't actually think, well, it's possible, but I don't think it's likely that phones are going to be pulled off the shelves. I think what's more likely to happen over time is some licensing. Apple's going to license, I would imagine, some of its patents to Samsung and to other cell phone manufacturers who use the Android operating system. And it's going to make quite a bit of money doing that. Also, I would expect Samsung and other cell phone manufacturers to start trying to differentiate their products from Apple's iPhone. You know, and the typical reaction to that is, well, that's good, more variety. I'm not so sure that's an unalloyed good, in part because things like pinch to zoom, tap to zoom, one finger scrolling, four columns of icons, all of which are covered by Apple patents. These are things that consumers have grown used to, and there's some cost to consumers of relearning a different interface for cell phones. Not sure that, you know, although these costs are not very large, there is some disincentive to consumers to invest in learning a different interface. So I'm a little bit concerned about competition going forward.
Let's take a call. Leah in Larchmont, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. My comment is this. I am a designer, but not a designer of anything electronic.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if you think in terms of design, you can really be commenting on all kinds of design. I am an Apple stockholder and an Apple user. I think the phone is badly designed. There's so many things that could be done to improve it and make it more useful.
So is this just a critique of the iPhone design?
What I'm saying is there's plenty of room for people to come out with things that are more ergonomic, that have greater visibility, that are easier to actually use. I'm not talking about the number of apps and the quality of the apps, because
mm-hmm.
I haven't even investigated
I
that
understand.
Fully.
You're talking about the design and user-friendliness of the phone. And it's actually a pretty interesting comment with respect to this conversation about the patent law, I think, Professor, because if copying Apple because Apple is successful makes inventors lazy, when really they could be picking up on people who are less than satisfied, like Leah, and finding those things that could make a competitive phone, a competing phone, more ergonomic, to use her word, or more anything else. They're not doing it because they just want to share the market with Apple.
Yeah, I think there's pretty sharp competition in the cell phone space. So I think a company that perceives an opportunity to design a phone that appeals to people who don't like the ergonomics of the iPhone or the functionality of the iPhone has every opportunity to do it. This is not a market where there's only one or two competitors. This is a market where Apple has a big platform, but not the biggest, actually. The Android platform is even bigger, and there are lots of cell phone makers who build phones for the Android platform. And then there's the Microsoft platform. You know, Microsoft's still a huge company, very powerful, very innovative. And the Microsoft Windows Mobile platform is a third competitor, and there are others. So this is a competitive market where if the market works anything like economics suggests it should, firms should have the incentive to meet unmet consumer needs. I think the real problem, though, is look at how Apple started. So if you go back, there's a great video on the internet which shows Steve Jobs talking about the beginnings of Apple. He went, when he was young, to a research facility in Palo Alto that was run by Xerox, and he saw at that research facility a graphical user interface and a mouse. And he looked at these things and he thought, wow, these are great. I'm going to take these and I'm going to tweak them. I'm going to improve them. And that led to the Macintosh. And that was really the start of a company that is now the most valuable company in the world, right? And he says in this video, good artists borrow, great artists steal. And we've been shameless about stealing great ideas. And that's true. Apple has been shameless about stealing great ideas from the beginning. And, you know, from my perspective, that's fine. They took these great ideas and they made them better. And that's how Apple became a powerful company. What's ironic at a certain level about this litigation is Apple is telling Samsung that it cannot do what Apple did to become the world's most valuable company.
Jorge in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. I'm a patent litigator, and I just want to make the point that there's a chance the verdict may actually not survive. And in fact, there have been, I believe, four billion-dollar patent infringement verdicts. Two of them were rendered in this month, including the one against Samsung. And the two that were rendered previously were both overturned on appeal when the case was heard by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. And I think this has been an underreported feature of the process. And in my view, this is just the beginning of the legal dispute, not the end.
Professor, you want to react?
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think it's right for several reasons. First, the design patents If you look at the design patents on the rectangle design of the Apple iPhone, the Samsung phones look broadly similar, but they're nowhere near identical. In the patent world, there's a basic question. When a technology is similar but not identical to a patent technology, how close does it have to be in order to infringe? The courts recently have been saying it's got to be pretty darn close. These phones are not that close, and there's a real issue here as to whether they're close enough. And I would expect the Federal Circuit and then perhaps even the Supreme Court to revisit that. And I do agree there's a substantial chance, at least on the design patents, that those verdicts could be overturned. Now, on what we call the utility patents, the patents that aren't on the shape of the iPhone but are on the features like pinch to zoom or one-finger scrolling, there's a lot of evidence for at least some of these features that they are not novel and should not have been patented by Apple. So, for example, one-finger scrolling is a pretty obvious shift from two-finger scrolling, which has been around for a while. So, again, I think there is a chance on appeal that this verdict could be narrowed very substantially.
Now, we just have a minute left, but to the theme of the title of your book, the subtitle,
yeah,
How Imitation Sparks Innovation, some argue that this ruling stifles innovation. Others defend it and say it will force innovators to think more creatively and steer away from just tweaking ideas that are already out there. From a consumer perspective, people can come quite attached to a certain design and functionality, however, in their gadgets and not want to see much variation. So what do you think the impact of this will be on innovation that's consumer friendly?
Well, I'm not sure that we know right now, but the point of our book is that the interplay between innovation and imitation is pretty complicated, and that in a lot of instances, imitation actually advances innovation. So, for example, the Apple practice of taking other people's ideas and making them better goes back a long way. So Thomas Edison took, you know, a dozen filaments from different light bulbs, and he made them better. He made the first filament that actually lasted and worked reliably. He was a tweaker, right? And if you look back at the history of innovation, many, many important innovations have come when someone who's very smart takes existing technologies and makes them better.
Yeah.
To the extent that the patent verdict in this case prevents people from tweaking the Apple technologies,
leave it
we
there
might have a problem.
With
yes.
Chris Sprigman, his book is The Knockoff Economy, How Imitation Sparks Innovation. Very interesting. Thank you so much.
Thank you.